Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome back to the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. I'm Sarah Gonzalez filling in for Brian Lehrer. In a few weeks, more than 3 million kids in New York State will head back to school. Joining me now to talk about the school year ahead and several school years ahead, actually, is New York Education Commissioner Mary Ellen Elia. She oversees about 700 school districts across the state and is overseeing the creation of a new teacher evaluation system for New York. She's also warned of an impending teacher shortage. Mary Ellen, thank you for joining me and welcome back to WNYC.
Hello there. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. So first off, I want to ask you what you think about the conversation, or I guess lack of conversation, around education issues from presidential candidates. Is there anything, any education issue that you think should be getting more attention from the presidential candidates?
Well, since I haven't heard virtually anything much coming out, I think that's a really good question to ask. Certainly we would like to have, and as an educator and educators across the state of New York and across this country would like to understand where the various positions are with our candidates and who is going to be more aligned with what we believe is going to be a movement forward in education in the states. So this is a real void for us. I know that in some of both of the candidates, there is something on their website, I understand, related to education. But I just don't think that it's been a conversation that certainly should be part of the future as we move forward. Hopefully it'll be part of some of their conversations in the future. We've had, you know, we've had a lot of things as topics. They become much less issues oriented. And it's unfortunate that education, probably the foundation for what needs to move forward in our country, is not on the topic list.
All right, there you have it. Listeners, we're going to move on to test scores in a bit, but I want you guys to call in. Maybe we have some teachers or educators out there who want to ask the education commissioner a question or share an anecdote with her. Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Okay, so test scores for grades 3 through 8 came out at the end of July, and New York City students showed some real gains, and a bunch of people are sort of taking credit for some of those gains, but test critics say that those gains don't mean a whole lot because this is a different test from previous year. The test is no longer timed, it's shorter, there are fewer questions. How much do you think the public should and can read into this year's results?
Well, so I think that for just so that we understand, over 900,000 students across New York State took the same assessments in grades 3 through 8 in English, Language, Arts, and Mathematics. Now, they are not the same assessments exactly that appeared last year. Of course, as you know, every year test questions change, but we did make some changes in our assessments, and we need to be fully transparent about that. We shortened each of the assessments at grades 3 through 8 in English, Language, Arts, and Mathematics. So New York had some of the longest assessments in the country, and we had parents coming and saying, and teachers saying to us, these assessments are too long, they're taking too long, and so we took off some of those questions. We did one other thing, and we lifted the requirements on timing for the assessments and said, if a child is productively working, they should be allowed to continue. So those are the two changes that we made. So the point is, it isn't exactly the same test, so clearly we have to be honest and transparent about that. But 900,000 students across the state took the same assessments, and I think we can look at those assessment data and look and see how students are performing. Did they go up? Did they go down? And compare them across schools and districts to see kind of an indicator. It's not the only indicator, and it isn't a pure walk from last year's test to this year's test, but it still gives us information.
Now, charter schools made some pretty big gains in New York City, according to these test results as well. And some of the charter folks have been saying things like that they are unequivocally better at educating low-income students of color than the traditional school districts just based on these tests. Do you have any thoughts on that? I mean, how do you interpret the results when it's kind of in this interesting place of being valid but not incredibly valid.
Well, let me say that the tests were valid tests. They were reliable tests. They were rigorous tests. It is not the exact same circumstances in the way that they were that students were tested. So knowing those changes, I don't think that we can necessarily think that, in fact, that there isn't anything to look positively at and to review and say, well, what did we do so that, in fact, students were able to increase their scores? And how did we do across all of our groups? So if you look at our grades 3 and grades 4, the youngest students taking the test, they had even higher gains than the rest of the state in English language arts. Well, part of that might be attributed to the fact that they, as a group of students, have had higher standards be part of their teachers' involvement of what they're teaching and the curriculum they're teaching in their classrooms. So those students had the longer exposure and they did better. But we still have to balance that with the fact there were changes in the test environment.
And if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Education Commissioner Mary Ellen Elia on the Brian Lehrer Show, and I'm Sarah Gonzalez filling in for Brian. We're going to get to callers in a bit, but one of the other issues with these test results is that there was a lot of students who didn't take the test, right? There was about 20% of kids opted out, which is about the same percentage of kids as the previous year.
Yeah, that's right.
Can you tell us about who these kids are? Like, who are the kids and the families who are opting out? Is it affluent kids? Is it...
So there's characteristics that we can say. 50% of the students that opted out last year went back and took the test this year. And 50% of the students who took the test last year opted out this year. So we have basically a flat number, about 21%. However, different students. It wasn't every one of the students did it again. Also, I think there's some characteristics we can say. For the most part, these students came from low-need districts. So in
low-need.
Low-need. So the wealthier districts in the state. We know that generally these students are not students who are English language learners. We know that generally these students are not students that are students with disabilities. We know that of those that we had in this testing situation last year, we know that generally the students are level ones and two students. They are not the higher performing students. So those students that are moving towards proficiency, but they aren't there. So those are the characteristics that we have. And understand that characteristic is not really determined by all of those students that didn't take the test, because we don't have data for all of them. But those are some of the things that we were able to glean from it.
So low-income students, English language learners, students with disabilities, they are taking these tests
for the most part, they're taking the tests.
All right. I think I want to go to some callers here. We have Ben Crawford Ben in Cranford, New Jersey. There you go. And you are a former New York City public school teacher?
That's it. Yeah, I taught music in different public schools in Brooklyn for 5 years. And I wanted to call in to say I'm not surprised that in both the city and around the state we're seeing issues with teacher retention. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful profession. I loved teaching, but with the rise of high-stakes standardized tests and with ever-increasing expectations for teachers to be subject to all kinds of supervisions and observations and unannounced visits, it's becoming more and more difficult for teachers to feel like they're succeeding. It was funny for me as a music teacher that I had a great principal, but she also wanted me to somehow include preparation for the test as opposed to just doing music for music's sake. So I had to sprinkle in a little bit of literacy and counting here and there. I played ball, but, you know, it's a lot of pressure, especially on those kids who are English language learners and the kids with disabilities who, honestly, they struggle. And their teachers who are working with them so hard, they know that they're sort of being set up to fail and feel very foolish when they take these tests. So it's really had a demoralizing effect on many qualified professionals.
Mary Ellen, you want to weigh in?
Yes. And Ben, I understand. In fact, the Regents put in some changes that would allow us to put on hold any of the outcomes from these assessments being used for consequences with teachers in New York State. And until we had the opportunity to look at a lot of the issues that are part of the part of what you just identified. But clearly, some of the reasons that we made changes in the assessments was because of some of the things that you talked about. There's putting too much stress is just not a productive thing, and we've got to figure out a way to make sure that we step back from the stresses of it and we support great teaching in the classroom. And that includes great teaching across all content areas, and I would certainly include music in that.
All right. I want to the U.S. Education Secretary, your predecessor, he is proposing to financially punish schools that have a high opt-out rate in these state tests. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I've been very vocal in my opposition to that. I don't feel that we should be, in fact, punishing students in any way for their parents' decision, nor should we punish the parents. But I think what we have to do is address the issues that are concerns for those parents and teachers and look and see what we can do to make this system better. But the idea of having a financial burden on those districts, I don't think is reasonable. And I've indicated that in my comments to the federal government and proposed regulations that came out.
But at the same time, I mean, there has to be a valid number of participants for those results to mean anything, right? I mean, if a school only has half of the students take the test, what does that say about how well that school is teaching kids?
Well, so clearly that is the balance. On the other side, you have to have an accountability system so that people, parents, and people in our community and those who continue to support our schools know that there is work being done in those schools to support kids. So there has to be a balance, and I think we have to work on making sure that occurs. So one of the things that I think is important is to listen to the practitioners, the teachers, and the parents that are involved every day in schools on these issues. And, you know, for a very long time, education and educators have gleaned information from state assessments or from national assessments. I think we need to wind down some of the heavy rhetoric on these, maybe take away those consequences that have been so negative, and I think we have to get back to using assessments to inform instruction and help teachers to get better.
All right, I want to get to at least one or two more callers here. We have Janet in Caldwell, New Jersey. Janet, you have a question about libraries and librarians?
Yes, the library has been left out of the equation on assessments, and so many critical skills related to the library have been left out because it's not tested on the test. So we have so many kids going to college and have to start out in these remedial classes because they just can't answer questions. They don't know how to research topics. They don't have a lot of the skills that they would need had they a librarian in the school. And I see students like in South Orange Maplewood is making a decision right now to have a dance teacher instead of a librarian and leaving out students starting from 6th grade to 12th grade with no library at all in the district. And I just don't understand that.
All right, Janet, thank you for your comment. I want to get to this teacher shortage that you've been talking about. And we have a couple callers that hopefully I can get to. You've warned that this teacher shortage is coming. New York by 2020 is expected to need 1,700 teachers, new teachers every year. What is behind this? Do people just not want to become teachers anymore?
Well, I mean, I think there's multiple factors that have influenced this, but certainly one of them is that the baby boomers are now starting to retire. Actually, that whole time period opened up a few years ago, but because of the kind of constraints on the finances of many families and individuals, they chose not to retire. But now you're seeing more and more people are thinking, this is a time for me to retire. And so that retirement age is hitting us with people leaving the profession. And we have a really a negative connotation about being a teacher. The rhetoric nationally has been negative on teachers, and it seems that that as you think about a profession and you're in your 20s, you're not jumping and saying, oh, I think I'll be a teacher, because of the constraints that Ben pointed out a few moments ago, that there are stresses there. We've got to make sure that teachers are well prepared to go into our classrooms to help our students to get to success, and that we continue to support them.
Okay, and we have, I think, a teacher who escaped, Steve, in San Jose, California. You say you moved to California to escape the New York City education system? Steve, are you there? All right, I think we lost Steve. Maybe we'll get him later. I'm curious, Mary Ellen, you're working right now on the new teacher evaluation system. Where are we in that process?
Well, actually, that we have a number of things that are part of our review of what's going on in New York and looking at changes that need to be made. The first step of this is to review standards. And so we have a committee that's working to review and make suggestions to the regents on standards for New York. That will be coming, and probably we will have established standards by the first of next year that are different than what we've had in place. We've had practitioners and parents and others reviewing our standards, so we're going to be doing that. The very next thing from that is then the implementation of those standards and support for teachers as they understand them, they see them, and they figure out how it's best in their school, in their classroom, to deliver those standards to students. And then we need to change assessments. The teacher evaluation certainly is a key area that we have to review and look at. And teachers need to be part of the development of that, a keen part of the development. And we need to work with them on what is an appropriate way to give them feedback so that the very best teachers can get better, and teachers that need support are identified and get that support. So it shouldn't be a punishment. Teacher evaluation should be more a growth opportunity, and that's the kind of thing that we're focused on as we move forward. We probably won't have that put in place until pretty close to 2018. Because it must be in place for the 19-20 school year.
All right. Thank you so much. We're going to have to leave it there. Listeners, thank you for calling in. Our next segment is education related as well, so maybe we'll get to some more callers there. New York Education Commissioner Mary Ellen Elia, thank you for coming on. I'm Sarah Gonzalez, filling in for Brian Lehr, and coming up, an argument for playing. We'll be right back.